basketball, Jones. I got a basketball, Jones. Got a basketball, Jones.
And a basket here. This place goes crazy. And one.
The game comes down to fundamentals.
All right, everyone, welcome to episode 12 of Storm the Court podcast. Barstool Reeks here with you, as always, joined by a special guest. We've been talking this episode up on Twitter for probably about a month or two now. It's none other than Rico Bosco. Rico, how you doing today?
You got to give the proper introduction. It's the most hated man on the internet, Rico Bosco. That's like the official. That's the official line. You got to go with that.
I don't know, because it's really close between me and you. Like we are the heels of the Barstool comment section world, of the Twitter world. I know on the rundown last night they kind of called you the pit bull that you leave out in the yard, that he won't bite you, but he'll jump up on the fence and give you a couple barks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably the best description. Well, I mean, listen, I'll tell you this. Clay's lucky that they haven't cut the leash. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting world we live in, that's for sure. We both are in the Barstool world. You are on the gambling side a lot more than I am. For me, it just kind of came. I was just giving out picks on the blog, and then all of a sudden, everyone assumed I was a capper, which I don't claim to be by any means. And nothing's more fun, I think, than when I put out my top 25 rankings each week, and you would think I kicked everyone's dog in the head in front of them.
It's wild. No, I mean, the guys who approach the game as a diehard, which is what I am in college basketball, but, you know, as I grew older, you get into that side of the gambling thing. But I think the guys who break down the game the most are usually the most lethal, but sometimes they don't even give out picks. Like you said, I know you covered Kentucky. You started as a columnist. Like, I think, I'll tell you this, if Jay Billis ever got into gambling, like, look out. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's the guys who watch the game. That's what I tell people, like, watch the games. Like, you can pick up enough yourself watching guys. Like, you have the app now. There's way more accessibility than there ever was, without these packages. Like, it's there's really a lot to watch. So
that's the best way you pick things up. Brent Musburger's probably up a billion units just because all he does is watch basketball.
Yeah, well, you bringing up these guys, and, like, I know people, like, think it's almost like a shtick, but I do have, like, stories for pretty much every guy you can bring up. So I had lunch with a sportscaster. I can't say his name. He is affiliated with ESPN, and his group, like, left, and he was sitting with us. So we were talking about the team he covers, but I didn't want to talk too much about that because that's all he does.
Right.
So I'm like, hey, I happen to be watching. I mentioned the college football game. It was like UConn Temple. I think I was like all over Temple or some shit on this game. And he's like, "What were you?" He goes, "What were you doing watching that game?" He goes, "Bama LSU was on." I was like, I like your voice." Like, and he was like, "Oh, okay." Then we start talking about Musburger, and he's like, "Listen, let me tell you something. Musburger not only has they have the TV in the booth. He goes, he not only has." You're supposed to have your game on. He doesn't have the game on. He doesn't even have the same sport on. Like, Saturday night when he was doing football, there was rumors he was watching the World Series. Like, and I don't think they're rumors. So they got to be true. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
Just
I'm
bananas.
Sure.
Like, Musburger, I mean, my grandfather hates him because, he was around forever. But it's at this point, he's just legitimately comedy.
It is. The sportscasters, especially, like, those older guys, like the Musburgers of the world, if you've been around those guys, you have a story. I've been around, I'll leave his name off the record, but affiliated with CBS. And 2 years in a row, I ran into him. And he was trashed beyond belief. You know, he was calling games and everything. Trashed beyond belief. Going to the room, getting drugged to the room by a woman who was about half his age, talking about what he had his plays on, and I'm just staring at this guy like, "You're unbelievable. You're unbelievable."
It's not the legend, is it?
No, it is not. It is not.
All right.
It is
that's
not.
Fine. That's fine. We'll leave it at that. That's
it
fine.
Is. So, speaking of stories, You've been talking this one up. It's almost like
it's got its own cult following that it sucks. Like it's the worst thing in the world.
The people who will be tuning into this will know what story we're talking about right now if we never mention the guy's name.
No, I think people need to know the name.
But the one that knows the cult following of this story, they'll know this. They'll know who we're talking about right now.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, I think you're gonna get like an extra 100 guys who are listening just for this story, just because we kind of built it up. But that's marketing. That's page views. Anyway, so it's actually like two. So my dad kind of did his own sports column, years back. So this is like 08. Okay, Patsos is with Loyola. They're playing Davidson, obviously, right? Davidson has the best player in the country, Steph Curry. So he does that stupid thing where he doubles Curry all over the floor.
Yep.
My dad calls Patsos to get a comment just so he could put in his column, Jimmy Patsos was unable to be reached for a comment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the typical line, just like, did his deal.
I did my work. He had nothing to say.
Exactly. Like, small-time guy, you know you're not going to get the call back. Patsos calls him 10 minutes later. So I was talking to him for like 20 minutes, invites him to a practice. He's like, just the nicest guy in the world, just Fruit Loops. Like, talking about basketball, like, really, really a funny guy. So, like, awesome. So, like, it could end there. That's a good enough story. So I turn out, I'm working for a small college in New York. Like maybe 2 years, 3 years later, a guy that I worked with had a fiance, or now wife at the time, who worked for somebody in Loyola's conference. Okay. So I bring up that story and he's like, listen, he's like, you want to see this guy? Now, I had never met him. He's like, you want to see this guy? They're playing him this weekend. Come to the game. I'm like, really? He's like, I'm telling you, the PA announcer for this college hates Patsos, okay? Patsos gets run up like a media timeout. They're like, oh, it's 14 minutes left? Like, okay, time for Patsos to get a stack. Like, at some point, you know what's coming, right? So we go to the game, and the director, or the guy tells me that the conference that comes over and is like, listen, don't say technical foul Jimmy Patsos. Like, we all know he's going to get one. Say Loyola bench. So the PA's like kind of half-assed, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So sure enough, he gets run up. Fucking PA announcer just riles it up. He's like, that's a technical foul. That's a Loyola bench. Jimmy Patsos just fires it. Patsos is screaming at the guy. It was ridiculous. I'm like, these guys are out of their minds. So that is enough. Small world. We're coming back from my cousin's wedding in Chicago. Now he's with Siena. Okay, I happen to know some of the guys that he coached with, so we knew like some names. I'm sorry, I knew some of the kids that played for him, so we knew enough to like go over. Plus, my dad's like, listen, this guy told me if he ever meets me, like, we go over. So I'm like, get dad, like, it's Patsos, like, whatever, like, we'll go say hi. What's the worst to happen?
Right.
So Patsos is standing there with his assistant coach, full sweatsuits. You know, they got kids on the with the headphones who don't give a shit. This was like a year and a half ago, maybe. And so he's like, you know, he tells my mom, he's like, yeah, listen, I'm gonna go over. Like, he's probably not gonna remember me, but we'll go over. I'm like, all right, whatever. So he's like, listen, coach, you might not remember me. He introduces his name. He's like, oh, yeah. You wrote for the Brooklyn. He wrote in Brooklyn, right? He tells the assistant coach, yeah, this guy's a great writer. He probably never read the fucking thing. He tells the guy, yeah, he's a great writer. He's an old friend of mine. So I introduce him, right? So, and this is, like, literally my favorite line from any coach. So we're talking to him about strategy, like what to do at the end of a game, and specifically, like, I think – like, if you want it in the player's hands or your hands is basically, like, what it came down to. So whichever one of us asked the question, and he looked us directly in the eye and he goes, I want the control. And we're like, coach, why is that? He's like, let me tell you something. Those are 18- and 19-year-old motherfuckers dribbling my paycheck up and down the court. He was like, I control the game. I was like, all right, coach. Like, he's like, listen, if I'm ever in New York, I'll give you a call. Like, here's my number. It was ridiculous. I mean, just, like, absolutely comedy. And people, like, tell me their own stories now. They're like, oh, I got to hear yours. But they're like, oh, Patsos used to hit golf balls with us. Like, I played on the golf team. And, like,
that's right. I was on that tweet. Yeah.
Some other kid said he tried to get him thrown out of the gym. Like, the guy is just, one way or the other, hilarious.
I'm a little upset. I never got to meet Patsos. So we're from the same area. He went to Catholic. I grew up not far from there. We both know, to a degree, Mike Lonergan. I'm a little pissed off. I don't have a story. Like, I have, I'm not that far separated from him. You know, when you do the 6 degrees of Jimmy Pastos, I'm like the third or second, you know, third or fourth degree maybe away from him. It literally pains me that I don't have a story.
Yeah, I mean, just meeting him, the guy. But that line, they're 18, 19-year-old motherfuckers dribbling my paycheck.
It's true, though.
Think you know about what? He's right.
Think
yeah,
about what you were
right.
when you were 18, 19.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't trust these kids.
No.
You know, it's insane.
No. I mean, you put it perfectly. They have their headphones on. They don't give a shit about the world. They're, you know, they're probably supposed to be going over the game plan, but they're just sitting there, you know, texting or tweeting or whatever. Not to sound like the grumpy old man, but I'm fully on board. I can understand why a coach wants that.
It was that to a T. I mean, they were in an airport. They were coming back from a game. They were going to another one. It was early, you know, it was like probably like right around now, this time of year. It was absolutely comedy.
And it's good that he's at Siena. I feel like that's a good fit. You know, Siena had Fran McCaffrey, who is a character in itself, has been more of a character at Iowa. I think he's a good fit at Siena. I'm curious to see where he goes from here. But when you talk about, you know, mid-majors, I think that's a perfect fit for him.
Yeah, I think he's too old to go. You want to be somewhere where you're comfortable, like where you're a legend, you know, like at the end of your career. So if he's happy there, that's cool. I'm sure. I mean, I heard he's up at Saratoga all the time in the summer. So
I'm
sure. He's got to love it.
He's not that old, though, too. He's only 49.
Bullshit. Really?
I'm pretty sure he's young. Like, he's younger than what you think. He looks old
as shit. He looks like shit, yeah.
He's 49. He was born in 1966.
That's bananas. I never would have guessed that in my life.
No, I would have guessed he was like 58.
Oh, wow. So maybe he does have a run in him. Who knows?
I don't think he'll get into the world of, you know, the ACC or anything like that, but... And maybe Boston College, you know, he's from that area. Maybe
giving it one last shot of a team who has some recruits and maybe their coach jumps.
Right.
And he can convince, he's enough of a name to be like, hey, at least meet with this guy. He retains a couple of recruits, you know, gives him a run at the tournament,
right.
Like one last one.
Maybe he wins a game in that NCAA tournament and that, you know, hey, we got this guy, he's a younger coach, you know, relatively younger coach. Like I said, one of those bottom feeders of the power conferences take a flyer on him. That wouldn't surprise me too much.
I'll tell you who should take a shot at him, like, immediately. If, let's say Pastos is like, hey, I'm a free agent. St. Joe should be looking at him immediately. They've been hanging on to Martelli for that one. They can still hang a banner down there, that one perfect season.
That,
like,
yeah, I mean, that's a weird situation there because I feel like he's got equity. I don't know if they'll ever fire him. I honestly don't know if they'll ever fire him.
When you account everything in, he's probably too involved to be fired, and there's a huge buyout, and they keep adding his contract. But I'm just saying, like, at any point, if you could say, if you were the AD and no strings attached, and you say, I could fire my guy and get this guy, I'm 1,000% doing it. You know what I mean?
Problem is, they're having a good year this year. They're sitting there 12-3.
They'll find a way to blow it, though.
I'm sure. I mean, it's the A-10. I don't think they're as good as Dayton. They'll get in the tournament. I don't think they'll do much, but DeAndre Bembry is a hell of a player that he has there. He can win him a game. If he wins a game, I think that now he buys him another year or two.
Yeah, I thought they had their most talented team a couple of years ago. I mean, I follow them by default, you know, being down in Philly for a couple of years. But when they had Carl Jones and obviously Galloway, Martelli just couldn't do anything. You watch them blow games late, you know.
Well, they blew the game to UConn when UConn ended up winning it all a couple of years ago.
I was very upset about that. I had some bets in Philly to friends. Usually my favorite kind of bets, which is usually a lunch or a dinner, like a burger or a steak.
Right.
Those are by far my favorite, having somebody have to watch and put out the bill. You know what I mean? Like, that's my favorite thing because you prove yourself right more than the money.
That's a little heartbreaking for us. We just found out we're about to lose a bet. So we had my girlfriend and I made a bet against our friend and his wife about when another friend and his wife would have a baby. And so we did a draft of months, and we just found out we're screwed. Like, she,
sucks.
The other one had, so, and the way it was a dinner bet, of course, because, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah,
I don't want to pay for that.
It's the best.
I don't want to pay for it.
Exactly.
Plus, I'd rather give you $50.
Right. You get to be right. It hurts that much more. So I was telling people, I'm like, listen, they got whatever they were looking at. You know that it's the typical Syracuse bubble, 19-7, 20-7, 21-8, like right there, right? So they got like 3 games left. they blow it. They blow, or they had three games left, and I was like, listen, they're going to lose this one tonight. I was like, even if they win the second one, I'm telling you, they're going to lose to LaSalle. And, like, LaSalle was horrific. And then, sure enough, they lose to LaSalle. Well, that's what it was. They had two left. I'm like, they're losing this. And everybody's like, it's okay. If we beat LaSalle, like, we're in. I'm like, no, you're going to lose to LaSalle. And I'm telling you, you're going to lose in the first round of the A-10s. They're like, no way. There's no way we're losing three. They basically needed any of the one. So they lose the first two. And it's the A-10. I don't know if you remember the game, but it was St. Joe's Dayton when St. Joe's hit a buzzer beater to beat Dayton in the first round of the A-10 tournament.
Okay.
So I was like a 30-footer away from telling everybody that was saying they were a shoe-in that, hey, you're about to blow it. Like, and the bubble was just shrinking. It was one of those, like, where a weird team was going to make a – you knew a weird team was going to make a run at a power conference and steal a bid. It was one of those where, like, a shoe-in didn't win their conference, and that cuts a bid.
Right.
You know, so, like, I was like, it's perfect storm. And if they hit a 30-footer and screwed the whole thing, I was pissed.
So speaking of seasons like that, that's how this year is going to be. You know, there's complete parity this year. Last year, you know, I talk about – I like looking at teams in terms of tiers as opposed to rankings. Last year, you know, the entire year, Kentucky was in a tier by itself. Then you had the Wisconsins, the Dukes, the Arizonas of the world right behind them. This year, you don't have that. I mean, you can tell me there's 14 teams that can win the title, and I probably believe you this year. You can make a case for about a dozen.
How about this? Even more than that. You hand me a piece of paper tomorrow that has 20 different combinations of the final four.
Yeah.
Even if some of those overlap, like let's say it's, you know, UNC, Kansas, Valpo, and Duke, right? And then, you know, and you'd be like, hey, it's going to be any one of these.
Right.
I couldn't really tell you which one it was. Like,
yeah,
if you were like, hey, pick one for your life, I'd be like, yeah, good luck. I ain't picking that.
Yeah, so it's crazy. I mean, I don't remember a year like this in quite some time in terms of where there's just not that great team. You can nitpick Kansas. You can nitpick Oklahoma, who are the two best teams right now. You can nitpick Maryland and Michigan State, who are 3 and 4. Do I think all four of those will make the final four? Absolutely not. But you can tell me any one of them will win the damn thing, and I'll believe you. So it's crazy this year, man. It just has the makings of that. It has the makings of a smaller school, and I say smaller school, a non-Power 6 conference team getting to the Final Four, a couple of them making runs to the Sweet 16, maybe the Elite 8. So what's it, you know, obviously you're tuned into to the gambling side and the fan side. What's it like for you watching it from both sides of that, with it being, you know, just it's hard to find that for sure team this year.
I mean, you could just be like, well, this team, like, I think, like you said, it's important to have tiers, you know. So right now, the bottom is going to drop out a little bit as far as the whole uncertainty right now. You're going to get a little bit more clarity in the next 3 weeks. There's actually a stat. Gary Parrish of CBS did something bananas, which is, it's even more, but it's not so bananas that he found it. It's even more bananas that it's true. You'd be like, you know what I mean? Like, as crazy as that he found it, it's even crazier that it's true. Something like, I think like 75% of the last 15 years, I want to say, 20 years maybe or something like that, at least two, most of the time three teams in the Final Four are in the AP or coaches poll top 10 in the last week of January. So
yeah,
like,
I've seen that. I saw that. I remember seeing something like that last year where there was that trend where it was like, okay, it has to be some of these. I looked at it too last year, and I think it was since KenPom became in existence, which is 02, and it was something like you had to be ranked in the top 40 of offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency to win the championship.
No, and it's even crazier. Well, yes. Okay. So
to win the title. Yeah. To every team that won it had this thing. And okay, if so it was, if you were below, if one thing was below the 40, you had to be within the top 10 of, like, offensive rating and then the top 60 defensive rating. That only happened, like, twice.
No, so you, well, they, what, it was even tighter than that. When I first read it in, like, 2010 maybe, 2011. What really killed it was some of these teams have now got in as outliers. The first guy I ever read who wrote it was Luke Quinn of Sports Illustrated.
He's the best. I love reading Luke Quinn.
I know we're supposed to hate Sports Illustrated. I have a guy at Sports Illustrated that I reached out to about that whole saga who works at the Cauldron. And he was kind of like, basically told me to screw off. But you're right. Luke Wynn is by far the best college basketball writer, bar none. And he said it was top 25 and top 25. So I used to just, like, the big pool that I do is a Final Four pool. And it sounds so simple, but it was in Sports Illustrated itself. It got up to, like, close to $1 million. You just pick the Final Four is the first tiebreaker. So if you nail the Final Four, it's the first tiebreaker. Now, there's 30,000 lines in there for close to, like, $300,000, $500,000 pot. So obviously the first tiebreaker is the winner, and then it always comes down to the second tiebreaker, which is the total points of the championship game. So people are always like, oh, that's easy. Like, and you're like, no, it's not as easy. So when I used to do that Final Four pool, I strictly took teams in the top 25 of both.
Right.
Because they – that's you got to be good. You've seen it. You got to be good on the offensive end and the defensive end. That's really the principle of it. If, for people listening who don't understand offensive and defensive efficiency.
Yeah, it's different. I just pulled up what the stat was that I found because I had to search what it was. Because this was – I found it last year, and it was since 2002, in order to be a champion, you could not be worse – than 40th and easier, the offensive or defensive ranking, according to KenPom. And on top of that, if you do have a ranking between 22 and 39, you must be in the top 10 on the other side.
Yep, and that was the thing. Most of the time, you can look back, most of the time the champion is top 10 both.
Yeah.
Like, so when we're filling out this pool and, like, you do this stuff, you mostly do top 25. The only champions that we're picking are top 5 or top 10, honestly, because
yes,
they're just
trying to
so
find
elite
those.
You know, it's yeah.
Now the one thing is you got to just find, and this is where it gets tricky, and where when you understand the game it helps, like a team like Virginia. We've talked privately about how we both have gone against Virginia the last 2 years.
Aided Virginia,
but
huge.
KenPom loves them.
Huge.
But following the trends, you would think, okay, they should be a shoo-in. Now that's the one thing. I compared it to what Wisconsin was like with Bo Ryan before Kaminsky and Decker, where he played such a slow-paced game that he let teams stick around and then ultimately got upset in March. Because he let those teams that he should have beaten by 10, 12 points, it'd be a four-point game with four to go, and then they get outplayed the last 4 minutes.
The biggest team like that to me was the Georgetown team that was the 2 seed. Now, everybody's going to say, like, oh, what are you, a dick? I didn't think they were going to lose to Florida Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that for a fact.
No
I
one
didn't
thought
pick that.
That. No one no, thought
I know,
that.
I know, but I was fading them hard. Like,
yeah,
no matter what, whatever
I
was
hear
coming,
that a lot.
I was fading them hard.
I hear that a lot. I actually, I love Georgetown. When they made the run to the Final Four, what was that, in 07? When they lost to UCLA right around
like
there.
That.
Oh, yeah, 07, I think it was. I was on them all the way. I had a little bit of a love affair with Georgetown, so I try to avoid it. But, yeah, I've been hearing a lot. Georgetown, I'm pushing Virginia. So this year, who do you have or who have you seen that, the polls like, that the fans like, that maybe KenPom likes, that you think is overvalued as of January 12th?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two parts real quick to get like real deep in how I break that things down as far as gambling. You said the offensive and defensive efficiency.
Yep.
So if you see that raw number there, if you got KenPom pulled up, I'm sure you know it like the back of your hand. But you know that raw number there that says like 111.1?
Yes.
Okay. So real quick, if you're not a true diehard, you're not really going to appreciate this. But I'm telling you, if you're a gambler, you're going to be interested in this. For the 10 years of KenPom, from 03 to 12, when I pulled it up, when I first really got into this pool, like, huge, and I was the one organizing, like, my my group, my guys, collecting all the money and who we were going to fade and things. So there's something like a hundred in 10 years, and now it's gone up a little bit more. I could pull up the exact stats as we get closer to March, but it's what I call the NFW list. No fucking way, okay? Because it's established from my dad, who used to show up at rec league, like the parish league intramural drafts, and he would only have one list, and it said NFW, and it was the kids. It was the kids he wanted no part of. He was like, "Fuck this." So the rationale of this team, like you said, they have to be top 10 on the other end, right?
Right.
So this rationale means that these teams do nothing extraordinary. So think of like Notre Dame last year. You know that their defensive efficiency was like 105, but they had the second best offense in the country. So they can rely on something for a stretch to get them to the Final Four. Right?
And they about did.
They about did. Okay? It seems like that. The Fighting Pitsnoggles back in 05 and 06.
Oh, fuck that team.
Yeah, I love that team.
I fucking hated that team.
Oh, you hated that team?
Well, I grew up a Wake Forest fan. Wake Forest should have won that all that year when they were the number two seed with Chris Paul. That was the worst basketball day of my life. So I ended up – that was March 2015 – or 2005. 3 o'clock tip-off, my senior year. I'm the starting point guard in the state championship game. We blow a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. That night, I'm a Wake Forest fan. And they lose in triple overtime or double overtime to West Virginia. The absolute worst basketball day.
I was in a state championship the same weekend.
Worst basketball day of my life.
Insane. We watched Tyler Copperath beat that Syracuse team.
Tyler Copperath, I remember that one.
Yep, that was the same night, the same weekend, I should say. So that was a bananas tournament anyway. But so before I forget, so the rationale here is that they do nothing that could carry them.
Right.
So the numbers that I came up with for the NFW criteria was above 90 on defense, raw number, and below 115. I'm telling you, it's something – I can get you the exact numbers, but it's something ridiculous now.
Pretty much
like,
teams that are playing single-digit games every time they step
exactly.
on the court.
Exactly. So they're just kind of meddling through the road. And
the line's always going to be like six either way, whether they're at home or on the road.
They may have racked up enough wins. That's why they're high seat. You got to pray that some of these – are up there at the end of the year. Georgetown was one of those NFW teams. Virginia last year was one of those NFW teams. I'm sorry. No, Virginia had a really good
defense.
I don't think Virginia was on there. But what was a real bad – oh, no, I'll tell you what. Nova was on there last year. I know that for a fact. So as far to get all this whole full circle, if you blindly bet the money lines on some of these teams, and it's even better when they're like a five or a six – they're the most likely to get upset. So you can make a lot of money going against these NFW teams. And these NFW teams, like, almost never make the Final Four. It's something like two or four total. I think the only one who ever won was UConn, and that was a bananas year 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you can book it that these teams are getting upset outright early. It's great. It's something that I'm just like just blindly take all these money lines. But a team that I would throw out right now, honestly, based off of that, is Duke. Honestly, first off, for the simple fact that you're not going to repeat. Like if you tell me
so hard to repeat.
I'm not taking Duke, and I'm a Duke fan.
I said that in the preseason. I looked at the top 10 of the AP. Preseason and said, here's who to put some money on, here's who's not. And when it came to Duke, I just said, no. You could tell me they were the prohibitive favorite, and I would say no just because of how hard it is to repeat. And it's just as simple as that. It's impossible.
Yeah, so, I mean, even as a Duke fan, I'd throw Duke out. I'm not fully sold. I know you love Oklahoma. I'm still not fully sold on Lon Kruger ever winning a title.
Oh, see, I'm all in on Oklahoma. It's they can play defense like, and you know, they can guard, they can score, they can shoot the ball. The only thing that scares me, they don't have depth.
Right. And the Big 12 has now become my favorite conference, pretty much. Ever since watching, 2 years ago, watching that Iowa State team make the run all the way through. The Big 12 is maybe the most entertaining basketball. People are going to say, like, oh, it's too up and down. But, I mean, that's the way the game's going. It's almost like, you know, they don't. People are like, ah, they don't play any defense. I mean, those games are so entertaining. And you saw it with Kansas-Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I hate when people say they don't play defense. I mean, Oklahoma's a great defensive team. Kansas is notoriously a great defensive team.
Is that people were like, oh, Buddy Hield for 46. Like, oh, he got lit up. And it's like, if you watch the game, like, he hit seven threes. I mean, in Kansas, he wasn't getting good looks. You know, like, he was hitting some tough shots. So it's just a fun conference. I'm trying to think of who else I left off here. West Virginia, kind of for the same reason. I know Huggins is pretty good, but I watched that team.
They can't score in the half court.
Yes. So I went to the Jimmy V and I watched that, and they dominated Virginia early on. And then they just
then they had to play in the half court and shoot long apart. Jumpers.
And I'll tell you what, for a guy who hated Virginia, I mean, they could have been a one in a high school bracket, and I was like, they'll find a way to lose. They don't score enough. I love Virginia this year. I think the kid Brogdon, obviously, is everyone.
Brogdon, I mean, Brogdon's a legit All-American candidate.
But the guy I love is Gil. I think Gil's tough.
He's tough, but he can't get his own. He has to get set up, I feel like.
They run some sets to get guys open. I mean, in Luke Wynn's column, they run these sets, and you're just looking like, wow, why is he so wide open? Like,
You think they can win with Gil as your number two? You think a team can win a championship with Gil as your number two, though? I mean, you're talking winning six games here in a row.
But you're also talking about a year where it's wide open. So, like, I mean, you know,
best thing for him this year.
Last year, no way. And that's why I would have said it. Because the 1-2s were Kaminsky and Decker, Okafor and Jones.
Winslow.
Everybody wants to say, like, Winslow. I watched Winslow. He didn't come on till late. Jones was the guy, and Jones was the guy in the championship game. Kentucky had a million guys. Who was the fourth Final Four team last year? Michigan State had Valentine.
Michigan State.
You know, whoever the hell else.
Trice.
Yeah, whatever 9 year seniors they had on that team last year. I mean, you know, you saw who carries them. So last year I would have said no with Virginia.
Well, the problem last year was when Justin Anderson went down, that team was different. Like, Anderson and Brogdon as your 1 and 2 would have been – they could have contended.
He ended up coming back, though, right? But his hand was never the same.
Yeah, but he wasn't the same. He wasn't the same. And there was something – I forget the exact stat off the top of my head. It was, again, looking back at last year. But there was a stat where when Anderson played – you know, before he got hurt, they were like the – second or third most efficient offensive team in the country. When Anderson was out, and then when he came back right afterward, they were the only at-large team that was worse than them was San Diego State on the offensive side of the ball.
San Diego State is another thing. I'm glad you brought that up. San Diego State and New Mexico a couple years back were some teams that I was just...
I had New Mexico in my Final
Four.
You're
an idiot. You're an absolute idiot.
Well, that was one where I was just trying to outsmart myself.
Okay.
Everyone was on. There was one where I knew nobody was going to have New Mexico.
If you did it for sheer value, then I can't really knock you. But I was looking.
Right. That was just in a bracket, too. That wasn't anything
I kept
big.
Watching those teams. And Steve Fisher's a good guy, but I feel like he's lost a little bit off his fastball, obviously, now. But those teams, they just didn't score, those Mountain West teams. And they were slow, and they were – I was just like, I'm telling you, like, sell the stock now on these guys. I was praying that New Mexico got a one seed, honestly. Praying New Mexico got a one.
Yeah, they were three.
Because the way the Final Four pools go is obviously the heaviest number when the percentages break down is going to be on the one, you know?
Yeah, that I remember that one that against Harvard. But yeah, it'll be interesting this year. So, but let's just go strictly eye test. What? Give me two teams that you think are undervalued and two teams you think are overvalued, just from the eye test.
The one I was writing down that was undervalued, but now they're just in a walking infirmary. Was Arizona? To be honest with you,
they are
because.
I love Alonzo Trier's game, and the fact that he's out now for 4 to 6 weeks is just
Deuce is good.
Brutal.
Obviously, Gabe York's good, real good. Miller's real good. But the thing to me, like, I try to look at it psychologically, like, for the last couple of years, those kids were walking around like, hey, Final Four or bust. Like, you know, so much pressure in those games. So much pressure on that team.
Yeah, and that's where it comes, like, you know, the NCAA tournament, I love it, but it is a little fluky. You know, they just had Wisconsin matched up with them perfectly.
Yep.
And that's just, it sucks that it came down to 2 years in a row that way, but it was just a perfect matchup for Wisconsin.
About, yeah.
Like, I think Arizona was the better team last year.
Arizona was definitely a better team than Wisconsin. Even 2 years ago, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would make this, I could understand that case too, but, you know, I liked Arizona from a talent standpoint, everything like that, better than Wisconsin last year, but Wisconsin was just the perfect matchup.
Yeah, it gave them fits. Yeah, they absolutely gave them fits.
Yep.
So I would say that they were undervalued. I still think they're undervalued if they can get healthy, because this is a year they can kind of play a little bit looser and shock some people.
Yeah, and that could be like a six seed, depending on what happens.
And they could be like that team with the guy that,
they could be like the Kentucky seed when they were the eight seed and made the Final Four.
Obviously, I mean, I gave out Xavier has now become almost, I would say, almost overvalued. Because when I gave them out, they were 66-1, and now they're like top five.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: what's going to happen with Xavier is they're going to get a little undervalued because they haven't looked good without Edmund Sumner.
Yeah, the kid who took that awful fall.
Yeah, yeah, and for that to be nothing was the craziest thing at all. But Sumner's a hell of a point guard, and so Xavier's going to get a little undervalued right now because of people are going to see that, and you know they're going to remember the blowout against Villanova, and sit there and go, well, Xavier's not that good. I mean, I heard it all season when I was ranking them in the top five. Xavier's not that good. Xavier's not that good. I think they went from undervalued to overvalued. Now they're back to undervalued.
And the Big East is better than I was thinking. Xavier was going to cruise with, you know, Nova is the only competition now. Providence has come out of the woodwork. Butler has come out of the woodwork. Creighton's pretty good. Marquette's okay. You know, like, that conference is back to its original roots I grew up on. But it's a fun conference, and it's better than what I thought it was going to
be. Yeah, well, the teams that were garbage took a step up. Then obviously you have St. John's, who took a step back, but I think they'll be fine in a couple of years. But, you know, Seton Hall's better than they were last year. Marquette's better than they were last year. Creighton's better than they were last year. DePaul's better than they were last year. So that obviously helps. You know, when you bring up that, obviously St. John's took a massive step back. Seeing Providence, though, I get a lot of, you know, being in the Barstool world, being in the Northeast, get a lot of Providence questions. SDLap247 on Twitter wants to know, what seed and how far do we see Providence going? So I'll let you answer first, then I'll go.
That kid is a diehard Rico Rida, so I like Steve a lot. Been going back and forth with him. I've been to the Dunk. I told him I joke around. The Dunk is probably the second worst named arena in the country behind the KFC Yum Yum Center, or whatever the hell that is down there.
The KFC Yum, just the Yum Center.
Just the Yum Center, then that makes even less sense because no one says Yum. Well, most people say Yum Yum. I don't know, whatever.
Well, that's because it's an advertisement.
I know that, but it should be Yum Yum. I don't know, it's stupid. Either way.
I don't mind the Dunk. I don't mind the name the Dunk.
No, the Dunk is now cool. It is the Dunkin' Donuts Arena, so it's stupid. And what the place? I've been there. I was there when Providence took down Pittsburgh who was number one. Actually, knew a player on each team there, so that was funny to see one kid hugging me and the other kid being like, "Yep, like this sucks." I'm like, "Yeah." So, but Providence. I mean, it's always cold there. I feel like they have the ice underneath, don't they?
Yes, because they split. I believe so. Because
if they don't, then it's freezing, right? A couple of point guards who played there both complained to me about the court. So it's like the old Boston Garden. They have a home court advantage, you know, which is working. But right now, Sports Illustrated has Providence as a two, and they probably have like seven games. They got five games against ranked teams left. You know, if they split them, if they take care of business, you know they're going to have a bad loss. That's just the case. You know, in conference play, you're going to take a bad loss. Like Kansas took to TCU a couple years ago.
They already have a bad loss when they lost at home to Marquette.
Right, but
you can't lose that. If you're a two seed like that, you can't lose at home in the conference
to a team
like that.
I still think they'll take one more. But either way, I mean, even if they're a the seed slate for them right now is 2-6, and obviously you want to improve. I mean, with 6 is going to be if the bottom drops off. 2 is if everything breaks right. You know, I think they're going to be, for their best case, I see them as like a, hopefully a 3, not a 4. Or if they are, you don't want to be in a 1 in the 1 region there in the second weekend, unless you're getting a week 1. You know, like the one that everyone knows to fade.
Yeah, and is there going to be a week 1 this year? I don't think so. Like, I don't think you're going to get the 1 seed that everyone just goes, well, they're going to lose to an 8 seed.
No, and in years like that, most of the time when you say, oh, they have the clear path to the Final Four, that's the team that ends up getting bounced. You know, yeah. So it's like a reverse psychology thing. But the kid, everybody loves Dunn. Obviously, Dunn's great. The kid that impressed the hell out of me was Bentel. He plays angry.
Yeah, that's. I was going to talk about him because I was low on Providence heading into the year. People say I didn't call Dunn a National Player of the Year, which is wrong. I thought he'd finish second behind Wiltshire because I thought Gonzaga was going to be better. And if it was just simply, I think they'll give it to the team that's more relevant. The fact that Providence is relevant now obviously changes that a shit ton. But I was low on Providence heading into the season. I didn't think Bullock, Lindsay, and Bentil would step up. But Ben Bentil has looked – I mean, he probably will be first-team All-Big East. Or at least he should as of right now. I have him as like a 4 seed. I think they're Sweet 16. I just can't picture them getting past the Sweet 16.
That's easy to say without the brackets in front of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think this is just me saying.
I'll put it this way. They should be a shoo-in. I think they're so talented that they should. There's no way they should lose in the second round as like their upset. You know what I mean? Because that's the threshold.
Right. Obviously, yeah, we're saying this without brackets. I just think their ceiling is a Sweet 16. I don't really consider them a Final Four, Elite Eight team, just based on what you see right now without looking at brackets. Obviously, that can
that's
change
fast. That's exactly what I wrote down. I wrote down, as far as ceiling, like you said, probably Sweet 16, but I think they're one of those teams that Monday
with the right matchup, absolutely, they can get to Elite Eight.
Monday morning, you're looking at the matchups for the next week, Thursday, Friday, and you're like, hey, you know, this is that.
They'll either lose to a 13 seed or they'll make
talking,
the Elite Eight.
Well, you're talking yourself into Providence. They're going to have a nice matchup maybe against a 2, a 3, or, you know, even a 1 that's maybe not necessarily the fade 1, but, I mean, let's say it's Virginia this year. Like, you tell me they couldn't play with Virginia, you know? Or they couldn't play with Duke.
Yeah.
As crazy as it is, they couldn't play with Duke. I mean, I'd be talking myself into Providence as the upset in the second weekend.
I mean, I wouldn't think you're crazy. But, yeah, for me, they're Sweet 16. You know, I was definitely wrong about them in the preseason because I didn't even think they were going to be a tournament team. Or if they were, I thought they'd be, you know, one of the last, you know, 6 to 8 teams in, just because I didn't trust the supporting cast. Chris Dunn, I said in my preseason, Chris Dunn's the best player in college basketball, but I don't trust his supporting cast. I trust his supporting cast more now. It's really just the difference in where I switched.
Yeah, I look at coaches, too. I don't know how much
Cooley's a good coach.
I don't know how much I can trust a guy in a huge spotlight like that, though. I'll put it to college football, like that. You know, Dabo last night. I mean, I think he did a great job with that team. Obviously, if they play that game 10 times, they may be split. But it's a lot of pressure on guys, especially in the tournament. You make the wrong sub. Screw up a set that you could have had. You make just a mental error. You know, like I mean, Jamie Dixon doing. You know that now he's been in the spotlight a bunch of times. But I give you that scenario when Jamie Dixon pressed against Villanova. Like, you just lose your mind. I think the guy's more prone to that.
Gave up that runner to Scottie Reynolds,
which tore my. I loved Pitt that year for a bunch of different reasons.
I faded Pitt so hard that year.
I had a friend.
So we talked about kind of the parity. Looked at the overview. Another question we got on a team that you're high on. You there?
Hello? Yeah, I'm still there. Yeah.
All right, so another team we got asked about, a team that we've both talked about that we're both high on from the mid-majors. Ronnie underscore Ventura wants to know how far we see Valpo going. I like Valpo. I think Bryce Drew is the second best mid-major coach behind Archie Miller. Alec Peters kind of is like the Seth Tuttle from last year from Northern Iowa. They were in the offense through him. He's a bigger guy.
6'9", 17-9, and 7.9 a game.
And he shoots like 42-45% from deep.
Just versatile.
So he can step out.
Player.
When you talk about how far they can go, I mean, their max is winning a game in the NCAA tournament. Again, without looking at brackets, they're going to end up being like a 12-13 seed again.
You think that low?
Yeah, I mean, because think about it. Would you rather give the Horizon League champion like a 10 seed, or would you give the number 6 team from the Big 12 the 10 seed?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
So, and Valpo doesn't have like that big win they can hang their hat on.
No, that's the thing I wrote down. So they have the best.
Rhode Island was supposed
right,
to be that
win.
So
they have the best defensive efficiency in the country. Okay, they're the best defensive team. We talked about Peters, obviously. I love Valpo during the year. I've given out Valpo. I gave him out last Friday as a pick. I'll probably keep the Valpo train running as far as the spreads and things like that. And I'll love them once they get to the tournament. You said a 12. I actually hope that they kind of run off like a 28-3 season or something like that, so they escalate into a 5-6. Because the thing to me, I mean, I know it's un-American to not root for the underdogs, but you look at mid-majors in the last 4 years specifically. All right, I'm going to run these by you. You tell me when a team overachieved. 2012, Wichita State was a 5. New Mexico was a 5. Murray State was a 6. 2013, Zaga was a 1. They went out in the second round. New Mexico was that 3 we talked about, lost to Harvard. Memphis was a 6. UNLV was a 5. 2014, there was only Wichita State, which was a 1. Obviously, they caught a bad break with Kentucky, but they still underachieved. Yeah. Last year, Zaga was a 2. They did get to the Elite 8. You got to give them that. UNI was a 5. And SMU was a 6. I think they both went out in the first round. UNI went out in the second round.
Second, they lost to Louisville. I mean, they played the seed. SMU blew that game against UCLA.
Yeah, they did. They did. But either way, I mean, either way, they lost. So the way I look at it, yeah,
I agree.
Listen, I'll root for these guys, and it's great when they make a run. But when you look at the brackets, you're more likely to get a team like Butler as a Wichita State as a 9. Butler as a what year were they when they made it? 7 or
they were an 8 because they
were an 8, right?
In the,
okay. Well,
in
they
the
made
second
it two
round.
Final fours in a row. What were they against Duke?
Right. The one year they're an 8. The other year I think they were a 7.
No, they were 5. I think they were 5 when they played Duke.
Or 5 and 8.
Right, so they were 5 when they played Duke. But my point is, though, these teams are more likely to be a higher seed and make a run. For whatever reason, when they get these high seeds, you're just better off fading them. They really have no shot at making the Final Four. That's just the way I feel. You know, and it's been proven right in the past couple years. So I'm rooting for Valpo to be like a 6 or even a 4 or a 5. I know that's impossible.
I don't think they'll get that high.
I'm just saying.
It's impossible,
yeah, no.
I think, unless everyone just implodes.
Right, and that's the thing, because they don't have a team lower than the top 100 left on their schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, even if they go undefeated in the Horizon, win the conference tournament, it's kind of one of those that's great, but who gives
right.
a shit
they
type
beat
thing.
They beat Oregon State. They lost to Oregon. Those are only 2 sub-100 wins. And they took away the bracket
right.
busters, which is the worst kind of thing for these teams, you know, to where you can equate them. You'd be like, okay, I love LA Tech. Put them up against Valpo. Let me see what they could do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was always a fun weekend.
Yeah, taking that away was stupid. But Valpo, like I said, I'm hoping that they do well, and I'm hoping they get a higher seed, but I just don't think I don't think they're going to be real good in as far as deep, deep hopes. They might shock some people in the first weekend, maybe get to the Sweet 16, but you're better off just not – they're definitely not going that far.
I agree. So one thing, while we kind of wrap up here in the next couple minutes, we talked on Twitter this week about our top 10 coaches, active coaches, in terms of, okay, you have a week to play in the title game. Who do you have out there? You know, who do you want coaching these guys? One of the guys we listed on, I think both our lists, was Rick Pitino. He is starting to take one and dones via grad transfers. We see it this year with Damian Lee and Trey Lewis, probably their two best players. He just got a guy coming next year from Penn, as opposed to going the Kentucky, the Duke route of getting the one and dones from high school. What's your, you know, do you think there's an advantage of going that route as opposed to the high school route? Or would you rather say, hey, just give me, if the high school kid's the better player, give me the high school kid.
I think it's a genius strategy. First off, Louisville is, I'm looking it up now, 28 offensive efficiency, 6 defensive efficiency. So you ask me to give out an undervalued team, I'll give you Louisville right now. If you, you know, and it's Pitino. I mean, so Pitino, this one and done thing, I think sucks. Because it sucks for the kids because they should be able to go to the NBA. It sucks for the schools and the fans. Like, I mean, even as a Duke fan, like, there's no real affiliation. Like, you know, Tyus Jones, like, he was a phenomenal player. He won us a title. But it's like, in a couple of years, if you don't remember that season specifically, like that game and this game and that, you're going to really forget about it. Where a guy like Battier and trying to think of some Pitsnoggle and who was the other guy? Olynyk. You know what I mean? Like, big name guys who go, like, you follow their whole careers, you know, and you can.
I think a lot depends too on, like, what they do afterward. Like, like Anthony Davis and John Wall and those guys, they come back to Kentucky all the time, so they're still, you see them at Rupp Arena a lot, as opposed to you know, a guy who maybe comes for a year, disappears, and then, you know, doing his thing, doesn't really come back, is kind of an afterthought. So for me, obviously as a Kentucky grad and Kentucky fan, they're remembered more when you see them back on campus. And that's really just what it comes down to. So when they're back at games, when they're back at that, it's still, they do the smart thing, a lot of them do, is they still wear the Kentucky Letterman's jacket or Kentucky shirt. You know, they come to the big games. They make a spectacle out of it, which makes you think, it kind of tricks the fans that, you know, they do cheer for, they want the old school way of it, of the 4-year guys. It kind of tricks their mind into, oh, hey, they're still a Kentucky guy. They had to go after a year.
Right. But getting back to Pitino, I think it's genius for the simple fact of, you bring a freshman in, like a kid like Wiggins, you know, like Self got involved in Wiggins. Even Jabari Parker for Duke. A guy comes in, he's not, Parker really wasn't in NBA shape. One of my kind of mentors in my circle as far as gambling was like, hey, I'm telling you, I know you're a Duke fan. I want no part of Parker. He's not NBA ready. Even though he's the number one pick, like, they're not going to dominate in the tournament. Sure enough, they lost to Mercer. Okay? So,
yep.
Self last year, like Wiggins. Wiggins is kind of like in that in-between. Like, do I take over? I still want to run these sets. Like, so they're not really mature overall. It takes them a year to learn enough about themselves and the team before it clicks. These transfers, these graduate transfers, they've already done it. They've been through the bullshit. They've been through, you know, team chemistry. Like, they go in, it's almost like when Joe Montana went to the Chiefs for that 1 year, or Peyton Manning now with the Broncos. You've seen it. Like, it's like, all right, I'm guaranteed to make a run, one last run. I ain't fucking this up. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's exactly what I feel like these kids are doing. With Kentucky, with Louisville. So I think it's genius. I think Pitino's a genius. He gets older. He gets men. He's getting 22-year-old men who have known the game, know what they want to do, and they're making runs. You know, they look like, hey, we're gonna make a run. I think it's genius. I have no problem with it.
It's just interesting to see, you know, the evolution of AAU basketball and high school basketball these days, where these guys are playing against. Obviously, you're playing against high school kids, but they're playing against, you know, your future NBA guys, even still in high school, as opposed to like a Cleveland State or a, you know, the I'm trying to think of another league, like the Horizon League, like the Missouri Valley, those type of transfers. You know, it'll be interesting to see because this is the first year that we see the true year of Patino relying on grad transfers, kind of becoming a trend for him now. So it'll be interesting. I think Patino's a good enough coach that it doesn't matter. He can coach anybody. He'll get them to play. He has his systems in place that kind of hides those guys, especially with the way he traps and presses. Can take away some of the offensive deficiencies that these guys have. But it's just interesting because it's the first guy you really see at a high level, high program like Louisville going that route of going through, hey, give me the guy from Cleveland State. Give me the guy from Green Bay. Give me the guy from Drexel. Give me the guy from Penn that – like you said, they're 22 years old and they want one run at a title at a big school.
Yeah, and Patino, I would put him on my list. We talked about the list of, you know, you get one game. I'll put Patino on there because 2 years or when did Louisville end up winning it? 2 years ago? 3 years ago?
2013. Okay, three years ago.
Okay, I was abusing Russ Smith. I was like, I knew my brother had played against him in high school. I knew him from the AAU circuit, obviously, but he was just Fruit Loops at Louisville, and that five overtime game specifically, he lost them the game four different ways in those overtimes. Like, could have won it, screwed up, gave it away to Notre Dame, and then Louisville figured out a way to get back. Like, so I was like, hey, listen, if this is the guy like directing the ship, you're in trouble. You know what I mean? And sure enough, he turned it around. He kept putting up with his crap. Of Russ Smith to get him through, you know, and make him useful. Like, hey, I know he's got deficiencies, but I'm going to use his plus to my advantage and keep riding this out. And he ended up winning the thing. Patino has done some crazy stuff. I remember he told Edgar Sosa, who was their point guard one time. Now, he loved Sosa after his freshman year. I don't know if you remember, they lost on like a crazy free throw. He missed a free throw against AC Law's team, I believe.
Yes, okay, Texas A&M. Sosa, with Billy Gillespie as the head coach.
Sosa was in that locker room, then they were just talking. Like, he's like, listen, man, you're the future. Like, I love you. By the end of the next year, he had him in the office, Sosa in the office, and he told them, I really advise you to transfer. And Sosa kind of looked at him like, you know, what? And Patino goes, don't worry, we'll find a school that doesn't play defense. Like a prick like that. Now, I think Louisville, by Sosa's senior year, didn't they end up making a run too, like Elite Eight? Or didn't he figure out a way to work with Sosa too?
Yes. Yeah, Sosa ended up becoming a pretty big name. I forget how far they went off the top of my head. But they did. Sosa did make a run to the second weekend. I'm trying to remember if that was the year they made the Final Four when they beat West Virginia. I don't remember. I don't think that was Sosa's year. That was Francisco Garcia's year.
Sosa would have graduated in like 2010. So if you look it up, Louisville. I feel like they made Sosa productive by the end. It was him and Peyton Siva.
Yeah, Siva. They intertwined by like a year. Siva was a senior when they won. When they won it in 03.
Okay. So, listen, he's taking guys who other people or himself, I should say, are ready to write off, and he's figured out a way to do it. So I think Patino's going to figure something out, you know, with this team again, and they're a sleeper right now.
So let's do this one more time real quick here. Just real quick, what were your top 10 coaches, active coaches? You're playing one game. You have your list, not in any specific order. Who are the 10 coaches that you have on your list?
At this point in their career, for people listening. So, like,
yeah,
so
it's Boeheim, right now.
To me,
right
Boeheim's off the list because he's too old. You know what I mean? He's too old.
Yep.
The all-time, I just want to shout this out, the all-time, if you were picking one game, would be Rick Majerus.
That's not a bad choice.
I read his book. He's up there. I'd put Majerus at one. I got the two Miller brothers, Izzo, Patino, Self. I'd still put Roy Williams in there. I'd probably still put Krzyzewski in there. Greg Marshall would be on that list. Beeline would be on that list. Bray and Mark Few are some of the names that jump out to me.
So the one that we obviously disagree on, the biggest ones that we disagree on is Calipari and Roy Williams. Because I don't have Roy Williams on my list and I have Calipari on my list, where you don't have Cal on your list, but you have Roy. I think Roy's lost it. I don't think he's been a good coach in the last 6 years, and he's just getting by now on pure talent. Yeah, I mean, when you watch him play, last year especially, man, that offense was put the ball in Marcus Paige's hands and pray that he shoots lights out. Like, they just didn't have it. He looked lost trying to figure stuff out. And that team wasn't bad. I mean, you had Justin Jackson, Bryce Johnson, Kennedy Meeks, JP Tokadar. That was a good team. I think they underachieved a little bit. In one game, I don't want him anymore. Like you said, it kind of like how you feel with Boeheim, how he's past his prime. You don't think he's as good as he was maybe back in, you know, 02, 03, something like that. But since about 08, 09, I just don't think Roy's been a good coach.
I also think Boeheim takes a step back because he can't teach the zone perfectionately to one team in a week that he can over the course of 35 years. You know what I mean?
That would be an interesting thing to see. To put Boeheim on like a, you know, here's your 10 all-stars, and you're playing, you know, the aliens to save the world type thing. And he has to try to teach them that 2-3 defense in a week. That would be interesting.
Yeah, you see a bunch of open threes. Like, guys aren't, you know, yeah. That's why I would put...
Yeah, there are definitely wrong rotations.
While you could say... Now, this argument is not the top 10 all-time. But that's why Mike Bray is up there for me, because... He can figure – I don't think he's necessarily the best in-game coach. I would argue that he's probably not. But he figures out a way to motivate guys over the course of the week, and he always figures out a way to use his talents. He pretty much recruited, like, the same team over the course of his years. The kid Haron Godey, didn't he end up looking – he looked like the kid – the next kid he brought in.
What the hell? It was Haron Godey and then –
Some kid. He was – I mean –
Oh my God! I can't. It's at the tip of my tongue. I'm gonna look it up. It's Jack something. What the hell is his name? It was like 2009.
Yeah, I mean, they were the same team. You've seen like kids like Hansborough, and who from years back, and whoever the hell their shooter was. Larry. I mean, they all run together. The names. That's why I'm blanking on half of these names. I remember Torrey Francis. Not Torrey. Torren.
Yep.
Was it Torren Francis? Was it for Torrey?
Torren Francis.
No, Torren Francis was their swingman. Torrey Jackson was the point guard.
Jack Cooley.
Jack Cooley. That was his name. There you go. And who was the point guard for Notre Dame last year that looked exactly like Torrey Jackson?
Jerrion Grant.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Like, Jerrion Grant's an NBA player. He's a little bit better, obviously, but they're all the same type. You know, like, if you really couldn't tell these kids apart. They're games anyway. You know what I mean? Like, so
right,
I would put
right.
Play up there, and that's why – guys with like quirky systems like that, I would put up there too, like Shaka Smart. If you're telling me he's going to get an equal amount of players and the other team's going to get an equal amount of players, and who you're going to put your money on, I think Shaka's going to figure out a way to throw a defense together that's going to screw everybody up, you know?
Yeah, I think Shaka went from like being like appropriately rated as a coach to being just so overblown after that one year. Like, he didn't really do anything after that Final Four run.
And you see it.
But and everyone just immediately, well, he's the greatest coach ever. He's the best young coach of all time.
Yeah, you see that.
And it was kind of like, well, calm down a little bit.
You see that stuff all the time. Who was the guy for Carolina that ended up in, was it Brad Daugherty?
Matt Daugherty.
Okay, Brad Daugherty's the NASCAR guy, which is puzzling, by the way, that he's an NBA guy.
Yep.
I flip Bond and he's on NASCAR.
Previous number one NBA draft pick, and now he's in NASCAR.
I'm like, get this guy off the television. But, yeah, a guy like Matt Daugherty, those guys who make the leap and then they just can't do anything. Trying to think of another name that jumped out, like a guy like that just fell by the wayside. It's funny, they always end up in Conference USA. Larry Eustacey, I guess you could say that about.
Eustacey had a big upcoming run to Iowa State before that whole thing.
I mean, you guys have touched on it enough. I don't want to kill him anymore because I hate him. I think he sucks. It's Tom Crean. Tom Crean has not really been successful in Indiana. He's going to drop back out.
Nope. He was right. That program was in the shitter. He brought it up to where, you know, in 3-4 years they were competitive, and then it just fell back down. Like it just didn't go. It went the way it should have for the first 4 years, and then it was just immediate drop instead of staying where they should have.
And you know, and you see these guys, and they make the jump. Like I'm telling you, he's the name. He's gonna do it. And they get to.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden it's recruiting. And
here's one for you, Billy Gillespie.
Yeah.
Because that hits up. And I remember when Kentucky hired Billy Gillespie, I was on campus. We all thought it was a great hire. I mean, what we saw what he did at Texas A&M and hell, even UTEP before there. Like, all right, you know, he turned A&M into a competitive team. They were making Sweet 16s with AC Law.
I picked AC Law to win that whole thing. I loved that team that year.
Yeah, that team was fun. And it was like, okay, yeah, we're fine with it. And then, obviously, the wheels fell off.
Yeah.
So, but all right, well, hey, that's it for today. Any final words for me, Rico?
Yeah, I'm on Akron. Tonight, and I'm riding this Evansville train till it dies. I love this Evansville team.
Obviously, you can follow Rico. If you're following me, you probably are at Rico_Bosco. He's given out college basketball picks as of now. What are you on the season right now?
I took an awful Saturday. I think I went like 2-6 on Saturday, but 20-13 on the year.
20-13 so far. So you guys can follow him on there. Are you still doing your Rico or your Bosco bets of the week?
Yeah, through our friends at Odd Shark. I mean, you got to learn to promote here, Reeks. You know, you want to bump up the chain. Yep. You got to learn to promote. Yeah, our friends at Odd Shark. Every Friday, you guys can catch that as well.
So that's on Barstool Chicago. Again, that's Bosco's bets on our friends of Odd Shark. On every Friday, follow him, Rico_Bosco. He's giving out picks. You can follow me at Barstool Reegs. Follow the show at Storm the Court PC. We'll be back later this week, catching up. We're in full basketball swing. It's wonderful for people like us. Football's over. There's nothing else on. And I'll tell you what, we're taping this here Tuesday at 7:40. The slate tonight's awesome. It's a perfect thing for the post-football letdown from last night.
West Virginia, as we're watching this now, West Virginia's up 27-21 here in the first half. Morgantown, it's got to just be nuts for a game. I can only imagine.
Somebody said that it was actually – they got hit with snow, and they were expecting a light crowd there tonight. So we'll see how that turns out.
Well, let's keep showing. They did show the Holly Rowe, whoever's here. They showed the snow. There was snow, but the place – they keep showing the fans. The kids are going nuts.
Really? Yeah, a kid in Morgantown tweeted me and just said, hey, we expect a light crowd here because some roads are shut down. I said, okay. We'll see what happens. Tough place to play regardless. I mean, Kansas lost there last year too.
Yeah, by one. It was wild.
Yep, I remember that. I think it was an overtime game, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the Big 12 has had more of those games than anybody, any other conference, you know?
They have. So, all right, well, hey, thanks for hopping on. Again, follow Rico at Rico_Bosco. Check his blog out every Friday on Barstool Chicago. Bosco's Bets of the Week by Odd Shark. And you can follow me at Barstool Reegs. Again, follow the show Storm the Court PC. Everyone have a good one. Again, thanks a lot, Rico.
Yeah, we'll touch base before the tournament.
Guys are good, but you five have been playing solid ball the whole season. So go out there and give it all you got. Let's go on three. One, two, three.
Tornadoes, go!
Well, I hope all of you are satisfied. It's your immature and selfish behavior has hurt this team.
No, no, Coach. Yo, Coach.